Welcome to This Human Life with the Philosophical Coach. I'm thrilled to have you tuning in. I'm your host, Sam Kilkuthis, aka the Philosophical Coach, philosopher, Hume expert, and high performance coach. This podcast is designed for you to go from being the passenger in your life to the owner of your life. It is designed for you to go beyond who you know yourself to be, really. If that intrigues or excites you, then you are definitely in the right place. The ideas are drawn from neuroscience, philosophy, my coaching practice, working with elite leaders, and experience. You can expect candor, humor, vulnerability, and ideas which are unfamiliar to you, and some you may just plain disagree with. You'll also get the opportunity to hear from inspiring coaches and leaders. Now let's get ready to question what we know and go beyond our limitations. Welcome back to This Human Life. I am super psyched for today's guest. It's my friend, Chris Jackson. And Chris co-owns Kinetic Life. And what's Kinetic Life? So, well, he's shining a light on people's career path, and he's being the project manager in people's lives. And Chris, first of all, thanks so much for coming on today. I'm psyched to have you here. And can you please let us know a little bit more about like the brand that you're creating and just who you are?
Yeah, thanks very much, Sam. Pleasure to be here, an honor, man. Really, really. Thanks for reaching out and inviting me to do this. So Kinetic Life, all right? Originally coaching and counseling in Connecticut. So what that is I have a business with my wife. That's why I have that label co-owner, how you introduced me, to where she's a counselor and therapist. So she's licensed in two states. And I am the coach of the outfit. So that's why coaching and counseling in Connecticut. And obviously I live here in Connecticut in the US. And what we want to do is just really expand on all that we bring to our practice. And what that means is, like you said before, project manager in people's lives, right? So we'll help people facilitate a lot of the moving parts in the current hats that they wear and the roles they find themselves in. And then what that looks like for them personally and professionally. So that can range anywhere from the physical health to emotional health to mental health and even spiritual health. So it gets pretty cool, but working with the individual in a whole holistic sense, it's really cool. That might sound a little woo-woo, but I
no, not at all. It just sounds like an holistic approach to life, which is so important. Like it's only if you haven't experienced the benefits of some sort of spiritual practice that I think it stays in the world of woo-woo. But I think we're really shifting in the way we see all of this. Like in my daily life, like one thing people don't know is that I use frequencies which elevate my aura. So I can run a program which within an hour, like I will be a different human being in the way I kind of like operate in the world just by, shifting what the chakras are. So if you told me that 2 years ago, I would do that. I would say no fucking way. But that's the human being I was 2 years ago. And this is the human being I am now. So it's the spiritual is super important. So I think absolutely brilliant. Not woo woo at all, in my opinion.
Totally. All right, cool. Yeah. So that's what we're all about. And really just helping, shine a light on where people are going in their personal professional lives and literally disrupting the path of linear success as people have known it. And we work with people who have rocked that model. I mean, they excel, they're achievers, high performers, the heart is in the right place, right? And we discover what the right place is for them. But it's really exciting to work with these type of people and building on this brand.
I love it, man. And that really hits home to what we're going to talk about today, right? Which is the identity of being successful. And specifically want to look at the question of what is in the way of people experiencing fulfillment, even when they have some measure of being successful?
Yes. Yeah, that's a question that is the scope of my practice. And being a co-owner, I love working with my wife, being that she's a therapist and a counselor, because she can do the real, real deep dive to where that just supersedes my pay grade, so to speak, where somebody's just caught in the loop and they can't forward the work. That's why I love bringing her in. But where I play and where I help people is really identifying what success looks like and feels like, more importantly, to them, because I have a belief that success is a feeling. It's also not a destination, but a place to come from. And if people have been trying on different hats and outfits and roles that they think is going to land them to the place of what success actually looked like, or what they thought it looked like for them in the past, and they're ready to try on a new outfit, so to speak, then I'm the person there that's like, hey, try this on, try this pair of pants on, try that shirt on, try this. Ooh, that tux looks good on you. Ooh, I like that hat. Oh, drop that, wear this. You know, stuff like that. So I speak in a lot of analogies with my clients. They dig it, but.
Look, it's all about who resonates with the brand, yeah. Right? Or what you bring to the table, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I've always resonated with you because of the energy that you bring, right? And I can imagine it's the same with your clients.
Yeah, likewise. I love the energy that you bring too. I got on the call with Sam. There's a little behind the scenes stuff here. And he went deep, fast. He went deep in the first 0.00 second. I was like, I'm in. What's up? What's up? That's cool because, you don't run into all these deep conversations on the day-to-day, right? So when you have somebody in front of you and they know what each other is about, it's like, I'm like, here we go, like a roller coaster.
Absolutely, right? And it's like, it comes from what we're going to talk about right now, which is clarity. When you have clarity in your life, like everything starts to align.
Right. Yeah, totally. I can't agree more. So clarity on what? And it's like, where do I like to play with my clients when it comes to clarity? And there's like a couple of different places I like to play. I like to help them have clarity on the direction of where their life is going, personally and professionally. And that's, any different aspect that can be. It's like, how you show up as a mother, how you show up as a lover, how you show up as a partner. Where do you show up as a leader? I tend to work with people in leadership positions. How do you show up in your community? What does it all mean at the end of the day? But I really love popping that hood and looking at that engine that drives them, their core beliefs and their value system, and what they think about themselves. And then I like to dig even deeper and let them know, it's like, look, this is how we survive and this is how we thrive. And we're all wired to survive. And based off of that, it's going to dictate a lot of our actions if we're not conscious of why we do the things that we do. So, I do a lot of work with personality types and this, that, and the third. And, each one of us has a core fear that we will double down, triple down on to feel okay, to feel that we're either successful in the way that we currently know it or we're on our way to create that success for ourselves. And depending upon a person's personality type, the way their mind is fundamentally wired, that fear looks different. So I work with a couple of different type of people. I don't work with every single type of person with every single type of personality type, but there's a couple that I attract. And it's usually one that if I would name them something, they can be called like the helper or the teacher. Okay. Yeah. And their core fear, right, is to be loved for themselves alone. How can they be loved outside of their accomplishments? Is it me or is it what I can do for you is what you love about me? And there's always that fear of, am I lovable? Am I worthy of love? Am I good enough? You know what? I'll put myself in the back burner and I will do my job very well, so well you can never see, you can never poke a hole in it. It's perfect. So they struggle with perfectionism and things like that. And on the flip side of the core fear is the core desire to be loved, right, for themselves alone, right? So the fear of not being loved for themselves alone and the fear of being, and the desire to be loved for themselves alone. So I play with people's core fears, right? I really bring them, illuminate the issue. And I say, based on your career track back in the day, personally or professionally, whatever it is that they're going to come to the plate with to get support around first, usually it's a career track. And if we look at your success now and how you created that, how does that align with you really trying to run away from that fear or towards that desire or both? And where do we have to place you to be back in alignment so that it doesn't feel so difficult?
Yeah.
Right? Now, those core fears and desires really form one's identity. And it's like a blurred line between the doing and the being. Right? So, doing 100%. Is work. Yeah. Doing his work, being is effortless. So I'm like, well, how can we do this thing with not the least amount of effort, but just with like more grace, more control, but not in the sense of needing to control, but more self-control, more patience, things like that. So I love playing with that as well. And one more thing that I add on top of the core fear and the desire, it's the vice, right? Okay. Or the sin, right? Now, when I mean sin, it's not necessarily like the seven deadly sins, right? It's just like, it's just like missing the mark, so to speak. It's like, what is that thing that they're missing the mark on? Or maybe it's called a weakness, whatever it may be. And for the people that I was just talking about right now, that would be pride. And pride, not in the sense of we're proud of what we do and, you know, nothing like that. It's like the unwillingness to understand and accept that they also need help and to be served and to be seen.
Oh, yeah.
The unwillingness of it. Because if they ask for, hey, what about me? And they don't get it, then that fear of rejection, of not being loved, plummets them. And they're like, oh, I thought I was doing all these actions because it was a loving act. What it really is it's all about me. Like, that's kind of like, so it's like a lot. So I love working with that. Yeah.
I love this, man. I love this. This, yeah, is like, dude, this is going deep into like my territory. Like, identity is like, deconstructing, yeah, someone's identity is like literally my favorite thing to do in the world. You're like, let's kill that off. You know, let's kill off that, right, part which doesn't serve you anymore, because, yeah, you know, like, do you really want to keep it around? Like, once you're present to the impact it's having on your life, you know, like, you don't need this. You don't need this, right, to have the fulfillment. But you've got, right, to see, you've got to be in the space of the pain and recognize what's actually, like, it's costing you to be, yeah, willing to give it up. Because, right, I think what I see a lot of the time, and I saw this with my own self, is that, like, so often we're not present to what something's costing us. We're not present, sure, to even the possibility of a different kind of identity, because, like, that's just how we go through life. We're literally just like on a treadmill, and we're just trying to make it through the day, you know, dealing with whatever challenges come up day in, day out. Right. And you're trying to, like, you know, keep your head above water, essentially. So the idea of, like, looking and reflecting on, like, is this actually me? Isn't something we're not actually going to be conscious of. You're just going to be, right, looking to survive the day, survive the week, you know, make budget, you know, hit the next raise or whatever it is in your immediate kind of proximity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally, totally. A lot of the doing, right? And kind of like forgetting about the being and how someone ticks. And for me, it's not, it's like I illuminate, like, this is who you are at a fundamental level. This is how you feel like you survive. And this is the way we're going to help you thrive. And it's not like the feeling of thriving has escaped these people, right? However, usually when I have somebody who hires me, they're in a place of, like you said before, the state of overwhelm and anxiety. So it's like, well, the surefire way to be able to lessen that is to learn on how you currently do your process, right? How you do your process instead of be the process, right? So when we can look at all those things together, then we can look at the tactical things, right? Because if somebody, like, you know, a lot of us want to be able to afford the lifestyle that we think that we want to afford. Yeah. And the tactical part, I like to break it down, since I'm a former athlete and really athletic and competitive still, is like, I like breaking things down in offense, defense, and home base.
Yeah.
Right. So they're like, well, this sounds all great, Chris. And, you know, and love and, you know, fulfillment and, you know, just do all these things. But I got responsibilities. Like, what the heck are you talking about? I'm like, I noted. I got it. I'm also like a human living here.
Yeah.
I'm living in the States. I get it. So it's like offense, defense, and home base. And I'm like, oh, so let's, like, really, let's work towards that. We work towards that in my entire coaching relationship with a client. And it, offense is usually, well, what is it that I want to create? Is it okay if I create it? What does it look like to create it? Is it going to accrue me the money I think that I want to be able to do these things? And the things, I have like all these sheets that we work over, like, what are the things you really want to create and how does that resonate to who you really are, where you're not focused on the core fear, but we're going towards your desire, right? And helping you get out of your way from you experiencing that. So it's like the passion projects, it's the investments in your own curriculum, your own education, right? That you really like love to learn about, and investments, making money grow and stuff like that. How can we like financially be secure, but also feel fulfilled with the joy of learning, if that's something that people like. The clients I have love learning, so it's like always, they love doing that. And then you have like the defense. Well, it will be what you currently do now for work that's affording your current lifestyle, that's helping you take care of all your responsibilities monetarily, right? And it also affords you maybe the fun and the leisure and the trips, or be able to get your hair cut or go to the gym, whatever it is, all the parts that have you feeling kinetic, right? It's like things are working. There's just some things that aren't working. That's why that's what I dig for. So all the things that help you be kinetic, you're creating that now, or maybe they're not, but they're probably doing that in some fashion. So we just look at, well, what's the amount of money that you need to be able to make to be able to do this? If you're doing that at your current job, let's help you find more joy and fulfillment in your current role, despite how awful it is. We're going to help you take ownership on your own perspective so you can stop feeling like it sucks so much. We're going to reel that back in, and we can see how you're creating your own chaos within your current situation and that defense. So I know I'm pretty sure you've heard like defense wins championships, right? So it's like you got to have that defense so you can create that offense. And as long as you have that offensive plan, there's hope, and hope is the last thing that dies. So as long as you're hopeful, there's opportunity and a hope when you get out of your own way. So we have offense, defense, home base is everything that generates that energy. It's the self-care. Yeah, the self-care. It's exercise. It's food. It's looking at the vices that are slowing down your energy that you're coping with. You know, it could be wine at night. It could be like junk food, sweets, you know, all that stuff, right? It's also taking care in your relationships, the connections that you have with your children, with your partners, with your friends, with your community, because that's where we can draw some energy from. If you feel like you have to do everything yourself, or you feel like people love you only through your accomplishments and what you do for them and getting everybody else's needs met, you don't know where you end, where that ends and you begin, basically. So we want to find out what that is. So how can we generate energy in the home base space, the connection, relationship with food, with exercise, the relationship with God or a higher power, whatever it is. Let's take care of this part here, right? Let's get the defense going so that we don't have any anxiety that we can't, you know, take care of our responsibilities. And then let's go offensively and let's win the freaking championship. Like, that's project management. That's a coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's old school, man. I love it. It's new school, but at the same time, it's like, it's taking such like worked principles for what it actually takes to, you know, win the championship in your own life. It sounds like.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I like the way it actually sounds.
That's effectively what we're talking about. It's like, okay, this is your hero's journey, and we are going to create it together. But to do that, we got to like toughen up your defensive line. You know, like we got to work on your skills as a wide receiver.
Right. So you know, I like that you know the football, American football.
I used to live in the States. I know. You know. Yeah. And then when it comes to home base, it's like, all right, like this is the destination. But if you haven't got this alignment here, you ain't got no chance of getting to home base.
Not at all.
Home base is both the foundation, right? Is what I see.
Yeah.
And also the place that you're coming back to.
Totally. Yeah. And then like when my wife comes in, right? So if we're going to keep it the sports analogy, if you get injured, the coach cannot use you to play the game to win the championship. So what the coach needs to know is, well, what's the injury? How long are they out for? What is the treatment plan to get them back on the field? Because they're an integral part of this game. We need them back on the field. So my wife looks at the injury therapy, counseling, see where they're in that loop. And in tandem, we work together so they can have that potential energy turn into kinetic energy. That's why kinetic life, right?
Yeah.
So that they can play the game well. So we let, like, as a coach, I look at what they want to create in a year. And so I think of football terms, I break it down in four quarters. Literally, there's four quarters in a year. It doesn't matter where we start. We can just think of what the, you know, each quarter looks like in the year. And then we're like, look, you don't have to win each week. You don't have to win each month. We got to just win quarter by quarter by quarter by quarter. And then let's define what winning actually even looks like. Because how you're winning now is not how you're going to win in the future. And the only reason why they came and sought me out for coaching is they are not feeling the win anymore. Even if they thought they were winning, right? Like even Tom Brady got out of the Patriots. He was like,
yeah,
I want to go do this somewhere else. I'm tired of Bill Belichick like belittling me and treating me like I never did anything here. Like I'm not an important part of this process. What the hell? Why are you talking to me like I'm a rookie? It's not like I'm in my ego, but sheesh, you became successful with me, not in spite of me. Let me go try something else here. So I literally love helping people really, you know, rise to their truest potential. It's fun.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing about that is, like, there is literally no limit on what your potential is. All there is how willing are you to give up being right about what your limitations are? Like if you want to keep your limitations, then you get to keep being right, right? Like, oh, yeah. I can't do this. I can't manage time. Like, how many times are people like, I can't manage time? It's like, time is a fiction. Like, it has a, you know, a reality in terms of agreement in our life, but it's a fiction in this other sense of it. So it's only real in terms of the agreement that we have around it. So, you know, you get to create a new relationship to time anytime you want, ironically.
Yeah.
It's just, you've got to get yourself out of the way. And I was literally doing this today with a client. Like, they had someone who had experienced, because of, you know, whatever condition they want to call it, like, they don't have a relationship where they can be powerful around time. So I'm like, okay, I get that. I get what that looks like. So let me help you with that right now. Let's create the future. Yeah. And then we're going to look at all the prime movers inside of the declaration of who you are in 3 months' time. We're going to create a statement of who you are and what you've accomplished. Not as a maybe, not as I will, like, I have created X.
Right.
Right. And if you look at this, like, anyone listening, is like, if you look at how you can do this for yourself, it is such a powerful move for creating clarity, because you've created the declaration of who you are in this moment in time. It's just a moment in time. And then you've gone backwards and you're like, okay, what are the prime movers that for this future to be realized, I actually have to act in consistency with? And then I'm going to block that out. Like, I'm going to put that in my calendar right now. I'm going to break it down into minutes. And I'm like, okay, I need an hour a day to practice this if I'm going to be able to excel in this discipline by this time.
Correct.
Right. And then suddenly it doesn't look so scary, because you've taken away all the overwhelm by just creating a process which works.
Yes. Yes. Now, to even add on to that, so I love what you're saying, because I do the same thing as well. Right. You say it so eloquently. I'm probably not going to use those words, but you are the philosophical coach. and I'm on the sidelines with the short shorts and the freaking whistle. So to double on that, right? It's like, okay, I love that. That sounds really tactical, sounds really practical. And then you might get somebody, maybe you've seen this, but I've definitely seen it. It's like, but I just fall off of it once I go on it. Like, why? Why do I get distracted? Why do I do other things instead of this, even though I know I want it so bad? And that would bring me back to, well, let's look at how you tick, right? Yeah. Let's look at how you tick. And, you know, I just gave you one example, one personality type, another personality type, which is my personality type. So I know it well. So when I get a client like that, I was like, oh, I know you. I know you. So it goes back to the fear. So the basic fear in my personality type is being deprived, right? Just being deprived, deprivation. What does that look like? FOMO, so much FOMO, right? I love having fun. Big value. Having fun. Love it. Right? If I'm going to miss out on some fun, damn, I'm hurting. That changes as I got older, right? 45 now. However, some people do get distracted because they're going to miss out on some fun and feeling deprived, right? So that lends itself to that core sin or that core weakness or missing the mark. And that, for me, for my personality type, is gluttony. All right. Gluttony on a lot of things. I haven't had enough fun yet. You know what I mean? I haven't had enough pizza. I haven't had enough TV. I haven't had enough me time. More me. I need more. I need more. More, 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 more. I haven't had enough. Well, this would be the adverse of that. Hours at work today to feel successful, whatever it may be. So now I can probably miss out on feeling successful, but neglect, you know, my wife or my son. Or daughter, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm not really in tune into what my vice is and what my fear is, then I am going to be led astray and get distracted and not focused. So I love bringing that into the tactical things that you're talking about, because I think, you know, as deep thinkers as we are and big picture thinkers as we are, we need to ground it with the tactical, because people need to know, like, oof, you're going deep on me. Is this therapy? I'm like, no, it's not therapy, it's coaching. But it feels a lot like therapy, because I feel like I want to cry. It's like, look, if you get stuck in the loop, probably therapy, right? However, this is the action. Here's the tangible deliverable. This is why you're getting in your own way. I'll hold you accountable. Let's do the damn thing. If you're not doing the damn thing for about 3 weeks, then we got to literally look at, like, what's up? Like, is this fear a really big fear? There's something that's firing in the neuron.
Yeah.
What's going on? You know what I mean? So I think that's really, you know, the people listening out there, sure. if you're a coach, really align with the therapist, it really helps.
100% can see what you're saying. Like, one of the things that yeah. I do, which I think speaks to what you've just been sharing, is essentially I look like, once we've created the future, you ask them, like, what's going to get in your way, if anything, from actually fulfilling this, right? Because they already know, based on how they operate as a default way in their life.
Yeah.
And so they can come up straight away, this is the belief, this is what's going to happen. And then you just go through each belief and you look at, like, okay, if you have that belief, then what's going to show up in life is more and more evidence for it. So you can keep it, or you create a new belief now, right? So I was working with someone today, was like, okay, your concern is finances. So what's the way in which we're going to create a future in the next month where you've created the finances so you can do all these different things you want to do? Mm-hmm. And we're going to get creative because you're a creative person. You just told me you're a creative person. And so suddenly, from speaking into her creativity, she was finding creative solutions, like the drop of a, like, it was beautiful. I was like, oh, wow. Like, you just come up with three. And like the first one, okay, you know, lockdown makes it a bit more difficult, but that's the next one. Okay, great. How much time are you going to need to be able to create that? Oh, we're going to half an hour a day and you can create potentially X number of dollars. And you get to do what you love at the same time. So you get to be a creative, make money, and do it in less time than you do anything else you're up to right now. How does that feel?
And yeah, it's like, probably felt awesome.
Yeah, she's like, that feels fucking good, right? It's like, and it's just getting them into their alignment. And in this case, their creativity, so that they then naturally create the solution. Because it's not our job to tell them what to do. If you're doing that, you're doing something wrong. I'm going to, you know, I think most people would agree, right?
Sure.
Because they can't discover anything for themselves inside of you telling them, if you do this, then this is going to work out. Like, no, like, your brain is still working in its existing kind of patterns if that's the case. The brain has to find a new solution.
Sure. Yeah. And that's the linear path of success. They've been told this is how you do the thing, excel in that thing, and then you can increase the probability of being successful, whatever that even looks like to somebody. And I think that's how people get caught up in that carrot stick and that trap and things like that. I really feel bad for people who, looking to create success financially in a trajectory that's like an upward climb. And they really at heart feel as if they're more like an entrepreneur, want to do their own thing, want to put their own creative spin on something. But, you know, they really lean into kind of like a proven track record of success. That's safety, right? Yeah. It's like, this is the way it's been done. This is the way I'm going to do it. And then if they have that little tug right there, it's like, but I know there's another way of doing this. Actually, I can see it. I have the foresight. I recognize the patterns. If you did it this way, then we'll be more successful as a company, as a branch, whatever it may be. And they're like, here, shush, you don't know what you're talking about. And they're just like, I get that a lot in my sessions. I get a lot of, so we look at it, it's like, well, geez, you sound very smart. And you sound like you really have a good handle on what is needed here. How about you create your own thing? You know, and that's where the fear comes. My own thing? Am I allowed? Wait, how do you do that? Do you know what I mean?
That's the question, right? It's the how, right? Like the tyranny of how. It gets stuck with so many people. It's like, it's literally one of the things I'm working with people at the moment. It's like, you got to anchor in what it is you want, then why you want it, and then the how has an opportunity to show up. If you go to the how first of all you're going to look is like, I don't know how.
Right.
And knowledge is going to get in the way.
Sure. Yeah, so that's what about the creating part. It's not like, you know Simon Sinek, obviously, right? Like a lot of people know who Simon Sinek is, right? You know who Simon Sinek is? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Unless you don't? Okay. All right. Yeah. So, you know, he has that book. It starts with why, which is like why you want to do something and get the motivation. It's like, why, right? But I think it's like a discovery process of what the why is. I think you have some sort of idea of what the why is, right? And it might lead you into that direction. It's like, well, narrowing the direction is kind of like, you know, like the who. So if he says it starts with why and, you know, you love working with the identity, right? No, it starts with who. Who are you currently? Who have you been currently? and in the past, and who do you need to become to be able to produce X, Y, Z? I always gonna look at your why, right? I guess it's like 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
So people are like, I want to do this because of bang, 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 blank. So as coaches, we like dig, but why? And what does that do? And who else is that going to benefit? And where do you see yourself? And why is that important? You know how we do.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, well, who would you need to do? Who would you need to become to be able to produce some of that stuff? And what are some of the rules, right? The bullshit rules.
I love
that
rules. Yeah.
Yeah, right? What are the rules that you've been playing the game with? Because you've been playing with such a rule book. I was like, why don't you play with a playbook? Like, let's break out the playbook. Let's win with a playbook, right? And some rule books are outdated. You know, some teams get left in the dark because they build the teams of championships of yesteryear the same way of today, and they're not winning like yesteryear. And that is so evident of today. There's franchises that just cannot win. They suck. They don't know how to draft players. They don't know how to get free agents. They don't know how to pick up good GMs or head coaches. It's like, dude, are you ever going to get it correct? Like, what's up? And that plays in people's lives and all the time. So it's really cool to draw those parallels and find those analogies for people, because they tend to get it quicker that way.
So I want to shift our focus a little bit, because I think there's something we want to kind of drive on. And that's this: some people have this perception that what makes them successful is their edge. So who would they be, right, without it? Like, would they still be successful?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? You have to define what success looks like and feels like to them, like I said before. And some people, like I'm saying, like these personality types, man, like these main drivers in people's thinking, it's just like, I mean, you'll have certain people that literally are so, that you're so good at work. They're such achievers. These are the people that only need 4 hours of sleep. I don't get it. I need way more than 4 hours of sleep, but they literally need 4 hours of sleep. Even if they say they're tired and they wish they can sleep. Like, I know a bunch of people like that.
Yeah.
And they're just like so driven to kind of like keep an image up. Like, this is what success looks like. This is what you do when you care about what you looks like. This is what, it's just an image, right? It's so deceitful, not only to other people, but to themselves. And they're so driven for accomplishment, they'll do the work of 5-10 people, literally.
Yeah.
And all they really want to do is be so damn good that you can't ignore them. You can't replace them. They're irreplaceable. And in turn, they get autonomy, they get power, and you have to rely on them, because they're so effing good. And in their 20s and 30s, they can hold on. 40s-ish, depends if they have a kid or two, right? These are people that usually control the freaking show at home too. It could be a guy, it could be a girl, whatever, right? Yeah. They are fingers on the effing control. They're not gonna let it go, because that's their edge. It's control. So their basic fear is the fear of being controlled and not making their own path in life on their own terms. We all want that, because we all have a sense of freedom. But everybody has a different type of tool: edge, sword, gun, mallet, club, kindness, being a sweetheart, whatever your tool is to ensure you are in control of your freedom and your belonging and your respect. You're going to bring that tool out, whatever it looks like. It just looks a lot sharper when somebody is like an achiever. It's like that freaking Ferrari. Like, I love the analogy of a car with one of my clients that I'm working with. He's a freaking Ferrari. Like, but he's such a family man.
Yeah.
And he's a devout Catholic. So he builds into his church, and there's a lot of things that he wants to do outside of becoming the CEO of his company, which that's literally the trajectory he wants to go in.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool. But it literally was crushing his health. And he's in his 30s. And yeah, it was just like, all right, let's look at how you're doing things now, because you're really suffering literally with your physical health. Like, you're forgetting to eat, you're dehydrated, you're waking up in the middle of the night cramped up, you freaking passed out the other day in front of your wife and busted your head open, and she was so scared you had to go to the ER. That's how he actually called me up. He called me up. He was like, I have to be doing this wrong. There has to be another way to climb to the top. And, you know, just like looking at that edge that we're talking about, it's like, dude, what happens if we just let go of having to be right all the time, dude? Because it's like, look, you're gifting people with your precision. We get it. You're making important decisions. you being right is not an ego thing, even though you and I know as coaches, it is, does live in the ego, right or wrong. But you're actually, it's a gift, because just like a pilot or a surgeon, their error of like messing up has to be like none. It's like none, right?
Yep, absolutely.
You feel the same way, especially when you have when you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders in your job. And these are the type of people that love being the lone wolf. They love doing it on their own, because when they can do it on their own, they have control. They are relied upon. They can't be controlled. These are the type of people, when they're young kids, they would not want to have help. They crush everything. If they don't have an answer, they'll go research the answer and come back with way more intelligent than they were when they freaking left, right? It was just like, and if they accept it as their own. So it's like, what if we just kind of like dumped all that shit, right? What if we just dumped it all, because you're intelligent, right? It's like they're talking about Ivy League grad and really smart, really intelligent, and he just fancies himself that way. It's like, well, can we just say that you paid the price to do that and you locked it in? Like, it's you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you've graduated 10 years ago. Like, it's locked. If it's not locked in by now, then dude, like, you're not waste your money on this type of education. He's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right about that. All right. So let's just like be a little bit more vulnerable, and it's okay. And if you're wrong, don't feel like you failed everybody because you're gifting people with your precision. It's okay. Right? Like, planes have crashed, right? And surgeons have been sued. But you're not in that position. We're just talking about business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Switch that perspective and letting them know. It's like, you can delegate. You can receive help. But these type of people only receive help from people who they think are smarter than or just as good as them. That's like the ego thing that we have to work on with those type of people. But we all have it. We all have our edge. Like I said before, it could be a pillow.
Yeah.
Right? Or it could be a sword.
So there's something I saw in what you were sharing there. It's like, what's coming up is basically the underlying kind of context is they have to prove themselves, right? Like that if you have to prove that you're smart, and you have to prove it to yourself as well as to others. You have to prove that you can get to the top, whatever the top is. And you've created this idea that there is a top, right? Which is the fallacy of its own. Because if you get to the top, then there's only a place to come down from, because you've created it as this, there's no option to grow. I'm at the top. Yeah. I made it to the top of the mountain. Mm. Oh, now what? Mm. So I think this is it's like the idea of, I need to get there, wherever there is for someone. That's what success looks like there. There is the top of the mountain. They're Everest. And then they're like, they don't experience the fulfillment once they've actually reached there, if they ever reached there, because they're attached to the outcome. So it makes it much more difficult to get to the place which they're actually committed to rather than attached to. And the second thing is, if they do get there, they realize this is not what they actually were looking for after all. And then it's like, well, now what? You know, because they've created this expectation that it's going to look a certain way once they've got to a certain place.
Right.
And then if there's disappointed expectations, it creates this sort of like spiral of like, oh shit, I'm back on the hamster wheel. Now what?
So what are those rewards that you see when a person climbs the mountain and they get to the top? If somebody actually did that, right, in the context of what we're speaking, what do you think they look like? What do you think, like, where they live? What comes up to you? Like, what I'm asking you, what do you think they present as?
Interesting question. So a person gets to the top of the mountain, and what do I see that they look like?
Yeah, what do they look like? How do they present?
I think I see someone who is like an endurance athlete.
Okay.
Like they have so much persistence and resilience to just keep pushing forward. Mm. But they've also got kind of this, like, once you reach that destination, you kind of let go a little bit of the edge.
Okay. Yeah. So this will be kind of like after coaching, or they did that all on their own?
That would be a person who is like without coaching. They've got to the, but in this context, I'm thinking of the edge as something where they're now going to go down a precipice, because they have reached the top and they're now not sure where to climb next.
Right? Understood. So they let the hair down a little bit.
Yeah. Whereas the edge that we've been talking about is a different one. It's what provides them with success in life, right?
Correct.
Like your edge is the thing which gets you results. Like we were talking about politics earlier, and I was saying like one of the things which doesn't work about politics is deceit, distrust, and dishonesty is what get a lot of them results. So why would they stop doing it? You know, you have to get them present to the impact of the edge on other areas of life or what actually creates fulfillment. So if you get present to what actually creates fulfillment, then you're less scared of actually letting go of the edge.
Understood. And then I just think of the question, so the streamline, the question I was asking is, what do they look like? What are some of the things, like the material things in their life? How do they present? So meaning, are they the type of person with, you know, a Benz? Are they the type of person with, like, nice clothes? Do they have a nice house? Do the kids go to the best schools? Or are they in a country club? Like, that's what I was asking for you. Like,
got it. Yeah, like, I think it's likely that that's going to be the case, right? Okay. Like, you can think of, like, the people who reached, you know, either the highest millionaires or the billionaires, and how often you hear about how few of them feel fulfilled in life, right? And how sad is that? Like, you have accumulated more wealth than most people are going to accumulate in multiple lifetimes, and yet you still don't feel like it's enough.
What about the person that makes $300,000 a year?
In terms of what do they look like?
Yeah. Do you think they look the same? Obviously, they have probably less toys. Right? But do you think it's the same thing? It's like, I'm doing this so I can consume and show what I have? Or are they just stashing
really
it away somewhere?
Right? Like, I think it varies based on what work they've done, like the work on themselves, because you can create fulfillment at really any level of wealth. Like, there's a certain level which you kind of say, like, this is what's a must have to be able to provide. And then there's everything above that, which gives you just the opportunity to create more opportunities for yourself and for others.
Like offense, defense. That's where, just like that, right? What you just said. Yep. Mm-hmm. Like your must-haves and then opportunities.
Totally. But if it's all about like proving that's what you're making the money for, like I'm going to show them. They said I couldn't do it. You know, you hear so often about athletes, what gives them their success is their edge. Because they're looking to constantly prove people wrong. And they get a lot of results from it. But I dare say what they also have to deal with then is the mental fatigue, because they're constantly having to prove people wrong. They're afraid that if they let go of that proving, who would they be? Would they still be able to perform at the highest level?
Right. That's what Jordan looked for all the time. He looked to be pissed off at somebody. And I think in that documentary that they had, The Last Dance, he had made up some fabrication of a story that some guy said something about him. And the guy was like, I literally never said that. But like the whole week, he was like, so-and-so said that. And it fired him up. He just had to fabricate the story because he needed a villain to use the edge of that anger, that focus. LeBron has always been like, where's the love? Why you guys don't think I'm the best ever next to Jordan? Like he constantly does not stop looking for the edge, and he wants that chip on his shoulder. So I get it. Yeah.
And it's so interesting, right? What you're just sharing, right? Because it's like, imagine that because that's the way that success has come, like they always have to live life from this place of, I have to do it this way. Like, like they're already brilliant athletes. They're already some of the greatest athletes of all time. And their edge has helped them get to that place. But what would it be like if they got to let go? Right? To actually then experience fulfillment, to actually experience the love, which they feel like is missing. And like, why don't you love me? Like, I'm going somewhere else now because I don't belong here. So I'm looking for another club to like take me in and like feel wanted.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I know what that feels like when I played football for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. I mean, and being a competitive athlete or being a competitor, you know, it's that identity thing that we're talking about before. Is if you say like, you know, a lot of people say, I am a competitive person. You know what I mean? Like, I am a competitive person. But really, it's like, I am competition. So if you are a competitive person, you're looking for things to compete against. And that works great in sports. Probably works great as being a lawyer too, I can imagine, to win a case for your client. Anything where records mean a lot. I think that's, you know, the competition, that's great, but you know, competition brings out the best of people sometimes. But that can leak into other areas of somebody's life. So it's like, well, I am the best sibling. I am the best freaking, employee here. well, I deserve this, and I'm the best this, and I'm the best that, right? It's all like this entitlement. Because I am the best, therefore I must, and I get. Yeah. And that's the edge. And a lot of athletes deal with that, especially if you play past high school, past college, like I did. It's like, where does the competitive edge drop off and you can still get the same results without that type of effort and exhaustion and always having to be on top? Do you know what I mean? It can literally be exhausting, but it can also be awesome because it helps you with your preparation as well. So, you know, when I get somebody who's a former athlete, they have a lot of edge. If they were competitive and they really cared about winning, yeah, totally. But yeah, I think that speaks and resonates to what you're talking about.
Yeah, like some of the greatest sports people in the UK, they work with Steve Peters, who they talk about like the chimp paradox and the chimp on your shoulder. And there are times where like Ronnie O'Sullivan, the snooker player, Steven Gerrard, the English footballer, you know, like he literally, because he was so on edge, like he would go out in the game against Manchester United. He was being put on the bench against Manchester United. This is like Liverpool's fierce rivals. And he, within 17 seconds, gets sent off because he's so angry about not being seen and heard and understood in that instant that he just goes out to take someone out. And that's how he used to play when he was a kid, as a teenager. He was a tearaway. He would constantly be putting people, you know, on the sidelines because he injured them and he'd be sent off. And then at some point he got to, you know, mature as, you know, adult, as we all do, or some of us do. And he started to operate from a different context. But when he wasn't in control, when he felt like he wasn't in control and he felt like he wasn't being loved by the club, which he had loved since he was a small boy, he lost it. He had to, like, you know, he questioned his identity. His identity is probably tied up to that football club so much. It's like, for you to be on the bench, for me not to be valued given what I've given you, who are you to do that to me? Right?
Sounds like Ted Lasso.
Sounds like who?
Ted Lasso, the show I watch on Netflix. It's like about soccer, and there's a character that's angry all the time. That's why I thought about what you're speaking. But no, tell me what you're talking about. It's like when you feel out of control, the first thing you want to do is take control back. And it seems like you just dip into that energy of anger and aggression and control. I'm right, you're wrong, watch this. I'm going to use my aggression and assertiveness to prove you wrong. But, you know, you and I know that's just not a sustainable thing. It's just like being a sprinter versus a marathon runner, right? Can't sprint a marathon. Yeah, totally.
And my guess is this, and obviously I have no proof for it. My guess is because what actually creates these athletes to be the supreme athletes they are is immersion. They have cognitive and emotional mastery of their craft. Like there's a documentary where Cristiano Ronaldo, there's literally times where they kick the ball in from the corner, they turn off the lights, and he still scores. Why is that? Because his body is already automated to getting into the positions that is needed to be able to see the ball without seeing the ball.
Wow. Yeah. He's become part of the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like that's how in sync he is with having done that. Like that's how the brain works. It creates an automation and then it just builds mastery. So you've just, you are being like the footballer who just is in position.
Right.
But when you're dealing with trying to prove something, what's more likely is that you're like, it's a crunch moment and you're going to be, I got to get the shot. I got to score this goal. And then, you know, rather than being in the moment, like, what does it look like right now to actually curve the ball around, you know, these guys and hit in the back of the net, or to not be in the presence of all the other noise and thoughts, which is there. You know, that's more likely getting in their way than they actually know. But because they've lived life from getting results from this way, that's the only way they could see to get results. And that's the sad thing.
Dude, yeah, there was a time where I had a case of the drop. So I played receiver. I played American football. And in 2008, I had, I was bad at like end of 2007, 2008, I got injured really bad. And I was just towards the end of my career. So I believe I was probably 31. So an aging athlete always has to prove themselves, and you have a younger athlete coming to take your position, and you have like rambles around the league. Can this guy still play? Do you know what I mean? So you're hearing this. Can he still play? He's old. He's not really an impact player anyway. It's like, I've been playing football since I was 7. Now I was 31 at the time. I was like, are you telling me I'm not Chris fucking Jackson, motherfucker? In my brain, right? I'll get angry, right? And then I had a coach come over that year in 2008. And in 2007, we played that coach and his team in the championship game. Mm. He came to our ball club the following year. And I was like, we got this coach with this pedigree. He doesn't know me for Adam. He just knows me as like the adversary. And then he's coming over to coach me. I remember when he even came to introduce himself to our club the first day when we went to go meet the coach. I went to shake his hand. He was like, I said who I was. He was like, who? And I was like, why are you going to be a dick? Like, you know who I am, right? And it's not like, you know who I am. I was like, bro, like, you literally just played me in the freaking, you were watching film on me to stop me in the championship game last year. You're talking about who, right? But he really wasn't saying who, wink, wink. He was like, he treated me like that, like for months.
Yeah.
Then I got injured. Then I'm trying to crawl back from injury. Then they're talking about getting somebody from the States to come over that just got cut from the NFL. And I was like, well, I'm definitely going to get cut from this team. They're going to bring over a guy like that. Then I start like trying to come back from injury sooner, right? And prove to everybody. And in practice, I couldn't catch a thing. And I was known for never dropping anything.
Yeah.
I had an identity of never dropping the ball, super reliable. I'm always open, throw the ball wherever. I'm going to come up with it. I actually like prided myself on that. And as soon as I stopped dropping everything, I couldn't get it back. I was like not the player that I used to be. And I just took the rest. You know what? I even said to the ball club, so they can have the money to bring a new player in, because I think they're trying to keep me because I played with them for a long time. I was like, you know what? Just cut me, because I don't want this team to suffer while I'm trying to heal. And I don't even think I can bounce back. I cut myself. I was like, just give my salary to the player you want to bring on, because I want this team to get over the hump and win a championship. So I removed myself and I never returned to that club. I went to go play for another club. The next year, I came back and shattered that freaking club. I made it my mission to beat them. I circled when we were going to play them. And I was like, I'm going to terrorize you. That was my fuel the entire recovery, the entire offseason, the beginning of the season. I was like, I don't care if I beat any other team. I'm going to whip this team's ass. And I did, and I was happy about it.
But now if you look at that, you know, would you say like, you could have still had that success without having the edge of needing to prove yourself?
I mean, I was successful the whole time. I played in Germany for 10 years as an American, you know, and I was just like, when I look back at it, I was like, you know, what resulted of that is I made great relationships. I played a game that I love, and I had a beautiful daughter over there. You know, and to me, I was like, yo, God just put me on this trajectory because he wanted me to meet my only daughter, and she was in Germany. That's how I kind of like phrase it, because it's beautiful to me to think about it in that way. So in the process,
yeah,
I couldn't think the way that you're talking about, but looking back in hindsight, I look at the grander picture and I was like so thankful for my career, the ups and downs and all around. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Look, I think it's a really powerful message, man. It's beautiful and it's powerful. And it's powerful because what I can see inside of it is just like, you know, if we don't look back at what we've learned and how we've grown from the experiences where it looked like a setback initially, then you're going to have a lot of resentment and regret going forward in life. But if you can really see the lessons which have been, you take it in from that, wow, like you get to experience more grace, you get to experience more love, and you get to experience more freedom and peace of mind.
Yeah, totally. Yep, more love. We were talking about that before.
Yeah, man.
We're talking about that missing ingredient, right?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that for so many people, I think part of the problem is the way love's being understood, right? And it's, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but like people always still want to talk about unconditional love. And if you're going to talk about unconditional love, you've already created a converse, which is love has conditions, right? Ooh,
yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, people look for unconditional love because what they're really looking for is acceptance. Accept me for who I am.
Yeah.
I need to be loved unconditionally. And you know what? I think that innately gets put in many parents' hearts, right? When you have a child, your child can F up time and time and time again, right? And it's the unconditional love to where we're not like, it's over, F you, I don't want to deal with you anymore. It's the unconditional love to give them 1,000 different tries. When we look for unconditional love in a partner, I'm sorry, but they didn't birth you. you're not getting it. You're going to have to learn on what love looks like to create that type of connection that your parent has with you, because you may or may mess up 1,000 times and they may forgive you. That is their story on why they go through all that, right? Doesn't mean it's unconditional. It's a partnership they're trying to co-create with you. You know what I mean? So when we talk about unconditional love, I think we all yearn for that and we get a taste of it with our parents. Hopefully most of us, I understand that other people's scenarios are not like that. Totally get that. That sucks. But just looking for a point of reference of what pure love looks like, I think we all search for that. Totally.
But I think it's the searching which gets us unstuck, because it's like, if you don't experience it just within your being, like it's out there somewhere, right? Like I've got to find love. It's like the old idea of like, I need to find happiness. Like love is just a connection with yourself, right? It's something you can have at any time once you let go of what's in the way of you experiencing it.
Yeah. Is there a universal thing that you think that's in the way of them experiencing it, of us experiencing it?
I think there's a few things, right? So it's kind of a construction of identity. So you start with like the child who experiences there's something wrong. And once there's something wrong, you're looking to navigate life from that outlook. Oh, something's wrong. Or I didn't do something right. Like, oh shit. Like, how do I avoid situations like that? And then from there, it's like you get a little bit older and you feel like, I don't belong. I don't belong. This means I ain't loved. I'm not lovable. Right. I don't belong here. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you cement that even further when you experience at some point in time, I'm on my own. And the people who are like, I don't want to ask for help. I don't want to do this. Like everyone at some point in their life experiences, I'm on their own. Everyone. I've never met one single person who doesn't experience this. This is just like an invariant of the human experience. People aren't always conscious of that fact because it's their unique journey and all this sort of stuff. But everyone experiences it, but they feel themselves separate from one another. They don't experience the oneness. If people actually understood how invariant their journeys are, there would be so much more love, because there would be so much understanding that we are a unity and there is a oneness. Like it is kinetic in the way it's that kinetic, we're all united in the world.
Totally, totally. What do you think would be one word that you can, you know, I love my one word, right? What do you think? What is the one word that you would say that would allow people to be able to connect? Don't use the word love though. You have to use another word. What is kind of like the ingredient or the tool that they would need to be able to allow themselves to experience that connection, that oneness and the love? What do you think that word would be?
It's called seeing.
Seeing.
And I'll say a little bit about why I say that.
Yeah.
I experienced, you know, working in a very unique environment. I can't say a lot about it, but it was essentially, I really got present to the fact that there's a difference between looking and seeing. And we go through life in a way which is really like just with the blinkers on. So we don't see everyone else because we're so closed off to just like the tunnel vision of our life and the people in our immediate vicinity, and everything's in relationship to us, right? But if you see people and you actually look and see them, like when you're speaking to them, whether it's on camera, whether you're in the world and you're actually looking and seeing them, you'll start to see a mirror of yourself. And then you'll start to experience a connection with others, even when you don't even know them, just because you see something of yourself inside of that.
Love it. I love that. I love that. So I have 3 words. I told you to pick one, but I want 3. No, I think it's 2 words. It would be grace. I think it's a big thing. Grace. It's 3 words. So grace. In a simple way, I teach my clients on how to practice grace real time, really fast, something that resonates real fast, because you can get really angry at a coworker or your spouse or whatever. I say, I just want you to remind yourself that everybody has their own shit. As soon as you just say that, it just drops you like, oh yeah, because I know I have mine. So that must mean they have theirs. And I don't know what's going on in their life. So they might just be bugging out about something. I have no idea why they're bugging out. You know what? Let's take 5. Let's take 24 hours. Let me just separate myself from here and not engaged in an invitation to fight. Let me not accept that invitation and just give them grace, right? So grace is one. Service, I think, will be another. Taking the focus off on you, putting it on someone else. Hard to do that when your cup is not full. And then also empathy. right? Empathy is the big one. I think that aligns a lot with the seeing.
Yeah.
If I'm empathetic and I dial up the empathy, then I can see your experience. So Brene Brown talks about sympathy versus empathy, right? Sympathy is disconnection. Mm. It's like, you have that going on. I have this going on. Damn, that sucks that you have that going on. Shoot, that's awful. Empathy is, wow, that looks really difficult. I hear you. I see you. I can only imagine what's going on with you. I'm here. Do you want me to get involved? Do you want me just to listen? Like, that's kind of like empathy. That's like, I see you going through pain. I know what pain feels like. Therefore, I will sit in your pain, right? Hard for me to do because I am the one that doesn't want to be deprived and like fun. So for me to create an empathetic space for someone is a lot of work, but I've definitely worked on it and I'm really dialed that up now. And I am empathetic by nature. However, when it gets really heavy to drop in with them, oof, that's like me going away from my optimism, me going away from like my fun and all that. It's like, no, now's not the time. It's not you. It's them. Get empathetic. Like, right. It's work. My wife. Holy crap. Empathetic, runs kind. I mean, stellar. Like, awesome.
Now, like what I see with you, what you're sharing there is like my own experience of like, how do I create love in environment with anyone that I'm connected with? And it's this allowing for a space to be created where anything that you say, it's okay. Like there is nothing wrong, no matter what. No matter what you share, no matter what you've been through, like there is a complete pristine space to create a clearing for you to create freedom from that environment, for you just to be held without even me holding you. You just experience being held because of the way in which the space is being created. And when people have that, they can grow exponentially because you just keep standing for them as a human being to do so. So when they're feeling a little bit small, well, my natural expression as a leader is to raise them up. I don't speak into what they're dealing with. I speak into who I know them to be when they're in their highest vibration, their highest frequency, because that's when people actually rise. If we go down into a space of the victim mentality, and there may be exceptions as where this doesn't work so well, but in general, if you go down to that, you get to confirm their beliefs. You get to keep them small. And that doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love everything you just said there. Yeah, you're an outstanding leader. It's great. Yeah, and I think for me, and this is my belief, shared by some, not shared by some. For me, I need a particular point of reference of a way of being sometimes because I am a human and I get upset, and I get frustrated, and I get overwhelmed, anxious, angry, just like anybody else. But of course, if you know, you work on yourself and you do the reps, like the Cristiano Ronaldo, kicking in blindly, basically, doing the mental reps, doing the emotional reps, you get to respond versus react to situation. And for me to kind of like create that sense of fulfillment in a way of being and how to kind of like do life in a way to your responses to many people, despite the stuff that you're going through, you know, mentorship is huge, right? So maybe there's people in your life that you see that you're like, wow, that person looks grounded yet powerful. That person looks like nothing phases them, but I know things do phase them, but they're human, but man, they got it together. Like, I would like to learn something from that person. Like, that's pretty cool. And, you know, for me, for, you know, the mentorship for me, right, because of my faith, it's like striving to be Christ-like. It's not religion. It's not like Christianity, Catholicism, and the like. It's like, well, here's an example of one of the most influential people in the world, is for my belief. I'm like,
sure,
dang, never gonna be Christ, but striving to be Christ-like is that's a tall order. But if you're gonna strive to be like someone, I guess it'll be like that. Yeah. Like, so my point of reference is like, well, what's gonna help me be more Christ-like? What's gonna be self-control? Totally. It's going to be patience. It's going to be gentleness, kindness, goodness, all of these things, which are called the fruits of the spirit. All of these things. It's like, well, what does it mean to be patient? I am I have to literally work on being patient. I told you what my core fear is, deprivation.
Yeah.
Gluttony is the sin, right? Yeah. Patience, bro. Patience? No, I have to work on that. Self-control, just said gluttony. Got to work on that, right? I would work out 3 hours a day, drive myself into the ground, because 1 hour is not enough, obviously. The gluttonous nature of me, right? Because I thrive off intensity, ex-football player, and you see my energy. It's just my personality type. So everybody has their stuff. And it's like, well, where's the point of reference? And what are the fruits that you can eat and hang on and grow stronger? Patience and self-control are two big ones for me. Also, I'm more empathetic than kind. My wife is so kind, right? So it's like kindness would be something I have to like build into as well. It's just a natural thing for me because I'm so like ambitious and driven. Sometimes I'm like a bull in a china closet. So kindness, I think I will just slow down. You know what I mean? Empathetic. Yeah, I can vibe with you. I can see what's up. Being kind means a lot of slowing down. You know what I mean?
It's really interesting seeing your own perception of yourself, right? Because a lot of it doesn't match the way I see you. And
oh, really?
Right, okay. Because good. We have our own like perception of who we are in the world.
Yeah.
And then everyone else has their own perception of who we are in the world and how we show up. And we tend to negate our greatness, no matter how like, you know, good a human being we are, all the time. And we really dial down into the things which we see as our weaknesses or things we struggle with, but we don't really take appreciation of like all the great things which make us a human being who people love and like cherish being around. And Chris, you're definitely one of the people, you know, in my life where every time I have a conversation with you, I grow as a human being, because there's always an opportunity to just like, to step into something bigger than wherever we, you know, we currently were before that conversation started. And your heart is always really present. The energy is always on point. The empathy, the kindness is just there. So I invite you, you know, outside of this conversation to look and notice for yourself, like, where am I not being kind to myself about the fact that I am actually kind at heart?
That's a good one, Sam. That's a good one. That's an edge question. That's an edge question. That's an edge question. You know what? So that, you know, I do a lot of self-reflecting as well. Then, like I was saying, I just kind of like figure out the patterns. Like that's just how I'm wired to see patterns. And you know, I live with somebody who runs kind, who's conflict averse, who's all about harmony. And I just look at it as like a matter of fact, right? So I am a kind person. I'm not saying I'm unkind.
No.
I'm just talking. I'm just talking about the preference on how I tick and things I have to learn at. But the preference is unconscious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like my wife is unconscious. She's like, you know, kind and slower. And I think that slower speed, right, allows her to take in harmony and what gets everybody else's needs met in the environment. Right. I'm more like, you know, one of those rubber balls that you can throw and it bounces off like all the directions. You know what I'm talking about? One of those things. Like,
I know what you mean. For sure.
Yeah. That's me. Do you know what I mean? And then if another rubber ball is like with me, I'm like, hey, what's going on? Hey, how you doing? But I also have a heart for the people who aren't seen. I've always been that way. Always like wanted to protect the kids against the bullies in high school. Wanted people to be noticed if they're not picked for the play on the team.
Yeah.
Even in like today when I'm in the gym and, you know, I see somebody who's like really introverted and in the corner doing their thing and not talking to people, I'm like, hey, what's up? They're just like, hi. But my wife and I were all about people. We're people. You know what I mean? So
you wouldn't be doing what you're doing if you were, man. And it's kinetic, right? It's clearly kinetic. The connection that you have with your wife, just from seeing it on social, just from hearing you speak about her, like it's clearly like a profoundly beautiful relationship. And I love what you're doing. I can't wait to like see more about like, you know, kinetic. I can't remember now what the name of it. You have to tell us again what the name
kinetic
is.
Life.
Kinetic life. Right? I can't wait to see like this really like taken off, because I have no doubt it will. And I just finally want to I want to ask you, how can people reach out to you?
Yeah. So you can go on my website. So it's, I'm in the middle of redesigning it. So right now it's in our old brand, coaching. So www.coachingandcounselingct.com. You can check that out. You can go ahead and book a call. We can chop it up, chat it up. It doesn't cost anything to be able to do that. You can find me on Facebook Under Christopher Michael Jackson. Sometimes people can't find me that way for some reason. I don't know why. But if you look up like the business page, which I don't interact with that much, but I can see if you get on there, I can reach out to you. That would be coaching and counseling in Connecticut on the Facebook page. Or hit me up on the email. So that's chris@coachingandcounselingct.com.
Awesome, man. All right. Yeah. It has been a real pleasure. I have loved riffing with you on sports because that is not something I usually get to do inside of these kind of conversations. And, you know, I'm, you know, still to my heart, like sport is still a huge part of my life daily, you know, no matter what. Yeah. So it's been freaking phenomenal to have you on and have this conversation, mate.
Likewise, man. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you for taking the time to listen. Your support really means the world to me. And without it, this podcast wouldn't exist. And what I invite you to do is to rate and review this podcast by sharing your biggest takeaways from this episode by going to lovethepodcast.com/thishumianlife. And if you're ready to be in the driver's seat of your life, then go to bit.ly/creatingpowerfulleaders.